Welcome back to the program. I'm Carl Dowling. Across to Western Australia, where a new report indicates a 7% level of homelessness within the Kimberley region. Jerry Dojardis is a Western Australian-based suicide prevention researcher who has worked extensively within the region, and he joins us on the program today. Jerry, welcome back to Karma.
Thanks, Carl. Happy to be on.
Now, we've seen very troubling reports coming out of the Kimberley region regarding the levels of homelessness. What can you tell us about this, Jerry?
Well, for years, I've been highlighting the extensiveness of homelessness in the Kimberley, and barely a whisper in the mainstream media, barely a whisper anywhere. In the Kimberley, we have nearly 7% of the whole of the population, of the region's whole population, homeless. That's 638 per 10,000 officially, formally, at the last census. Now, nearly 100% of that homelessness, of that 7%, is First Peoples, are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. That homelessness rate of nearly 7%, and the Kimberley must be understood as the highest concentration of First Peoples in the nation. 46% of the Kimberley population are First People. And that rate of 7% homeless outside natural disasters and civil strife is one of the world's highest homelessness rates.
What does it mean for the people in WA then at the moment with these looming community closures as well?
Well, they're profound comments and questions, and they're also key to a lot of the underwriting for the homelessness. The homelessness has been generated by cost of living pressures, neglect, government neglect. A lot of communities, existing communities, the highest concentration of homelands, remote communities in the country is actually in Western Australia, and the highest concentration of those remote communities, homelands, is actually in the Kimberley. A lot of these communities have been downgraded over the last 20 years. All governments, whoever's in government, have not done the upkeep that they should have in terms of an equivalency of services. Basic essentials have not been met. The poverty of a lot of these communities is not the making of the communities themselves, but manifest, generated by the neglect from governments. Now, everything I'm telling you is also on the parliamentary record in Hansard. If anyone wants to scour through the last 20 years of the West Australian government's response to many people and to some of their parliamentarians calling for more to be done, they will see that there has been a huge rejection towards this, that there has been a huge apathy.
As we've said, the First Peoples do make up a large proportion of the Kimberley. I think you said around 46, I think it was. As you said, nearly 100% of them are then, of the homeless people within that region, are then First Peoples. Why is there such a great disparity then between the non-Indigenous and Indigenous?
Racialization. The disparity is actually induced. There should be no disparity. If we were a country without racism, without racialization, there would be none of these inequalities, none of these disparities. It would be one measure for all. If we look at, for instance, social housing, not enough has been done for the First Peoples of Western Australia. The disparity exists because of government policies. The disparity exists because there isn't enough of a social dividend invested into communities of First Peoples. There isn't enough invested into the homeless, who are predominantly disproportionately First Peoples. And that neglect is also racialized. When we look at the communities themselves, we look at Aboriginal communities. They do not have an equivalency of services to non-Aboriginal communities. They do not have that provision. That is racialization. That is racism. So that divide is manifest. People relocated to larger towns. That amalgamation is an assimilationist bent because it's only targeted at the black communities, not at the non-Aboriginal communities.
Now, 7% homelessness in the Kimberley region is very concerning. Why do you think there's been so little coverage around this? Do you think people are sort of just carting it off to the side and putting it in the, I guess, it's too difficult to deal with basket?
I don't think it's too difficult to deal with basket. It's actually very easy to deal with. The amount of expenditure required, or the spend required to actually address public housing or to address a lot of the inequalities that First Peoples face, whether it's in suicide prevention, social ills, community distress, whether it's in housing or health, would actually reduce the overall burden on state and territory and federal budgets. In a nutshell, it's racism. We're still living today in 2015 a lot of the policies that we lived prior 1967. Much has not changed. But it's got to be said for what it is. The policies coming from government are, one, assimilation, and two, if that assimilation can't be imposed, it's neglect, and we're starving peoples into poverty.
Now, the government did come out originally and say this was it was more of a financial issue, that they wouldn't be able to provide financial support, and now they've sort of come out and said it's about protecting the children. What's sort of going on there? Why do you think they've changed their reasons for closing these communities?
They're making it up as they're going along. You know, in the end, the federal government is bent by assimilation, and it has been historically so, one government after another. But their argument was that the municipal bill needed to be picked up by the jurisdictions, states and territories, as is for non-Aboriginal communities. In part, in good faith, I would argue that was part of their rationale, that they had no other major agenda other than the fact that they wanted to save on the budget, and this has been their bent for a while, the slash-and-burn attitude. But the West Australian government actually has a different agenda for a long time, and this is now validated by the fact that lists have come out of these communities being targeted. It wasn't because of cost. It was because they wanted to clear the land, to remove physical connection to country, to reduce the impact of native title negotiations. It's all been validated by the fact that the Aboriginal Heritage Act in Western Australia has been smashed to bits in recent years, with 74% of our registered sites now removed from the register to make it easier for the miners, the commercial interests, the developers and so forth, or whatever, right, to deal in their exploratory licenses, tenements and so on, and do the mining.
Jerry, I do want to thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thanks to Karma, and you know, all power to Karma.